Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight-loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight-loss. PlushCare.com/weight-loss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Humans of Excess Manchester with me, Clint Boone. Every week we're going to be celebrating the spirit of Manchester by speaking to somebody who's helped shape the city in some way or other. This week I'm joined by John Thompson, star of stage and screen, most notably as Pete Gifford in the hugely successful Cold Feet. He's going to tell us about how surprised he was at the success of Cold Feet when it launched back in the late 90s.
I had no idea it was going to be that big. And it was huge. The timing was just right. The casting was perfect. When we did the pilot, I had no idea it would go that big.
And he'll talk about how he turned to alcohol and drugs while struggling with fame.
The press started nosing. You know, I used drugs and alcohol to self-medicate the pain of the attention and that I didn't want.
It gives a great pleasure to welcome to Humans of Excess Manchester a man who, over the last 3 decades, has become one of Britain's most loved comedians, actors through his work on TV, for the lovely man and a born and bred-ish Mancunian. John Thompson, welcome, how are you?
Thanks for having me.
Born in Salford, were you?
I was, Hope Hospital. My daughters were too.
Okay.
So my youngest, Sophia, she's 8, and she's one of the last ones because the maternity shut down now. So myself and both my daughters... Yeah. We're Salford Royal now, innit? Yeah. But Hope Hospital, yes, right. Back in 1969.
But then raised in outside Manchester, was it Preston the original?
It was, but it's Preston Borough, but it's a small village called New Longton, which is very green, it's very agricultural around there. In fact, there was an agricultural college in New Longton. But I used to say in my stand-up, I said, I grew up in a very interesting village that had 2 carpet shops and no pub. And I did the fast show live at the Apollo, and a bloke come up to me and went, "Can I shake your hand?" He went, "I can't thank you enough." And I went, "Well," he was all over me. And I went, "Why are you so excited?" He went, "I own one of them carpet shops. You put me on the map."
That's brilliant.
So I went to a strict Catholic school, All Hallows, and a sweet little primary school in Longton, which is next to New Longton, called St Oswald's. I wasn't too happy at secondary school because I was a bit wayward. I was class clown, but they did let me do some musicals at school, so that kind of kept me in check.
Yeah. Did you get punished for being a class clown rather than having it encouraged?
I got strapped.
I was exactly the same, man.
somebody sent me that joke thing. It was Manny sent it me. It was compensation for kids. Have you had a board duster thrown at you? Yeah. Have you been made to stand in the corner? Have you been given lines? And it was it was from Viz.
Yeah.
I went, my God. But when I first read it, I thought, I'm going to get a fortune here.
Yeah. You think it was real?
I thought it was real.
It was brutal, though, wasn't it?
It was. But honestly, you get detention for not doing your top button up at our school.
Yeah.
It was really, really hard work.
Talk a bit about your childhood. You were adopted, weren't you?
I was. And in Didsbury.
Yeah.
Catholic Rescue. And this is the interesting thing, Clint. Catholic Rescue is on Parswood Road. And 18 years later, I went to the Capitol building to do drama at the Poly. Met now. And it's exactly open address to what was the Capitol building, the Horniman Theatre on the corner of Parswood and School Lane, was Catholic Rescue. Wow. So I came full circle next door in 18 years.
And is that building still there?
No, they knocked it down, sadly. Yeah. But it was ABC Studios, so it had a lot of history. It shouldn't have been knocked down, really. It was listed as well.
ABC Studios. Wait, was that the old Granada place?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
The Beatles did the first TV there.
And I think Bob Dylan played there.
Correct.
Jerry Lee Lewis. No, was that?
Armchair Thriller was filmed there as well.
Wow.
And apparently that it was haunted by someone who died in the armchair. Oh. The actual armchair on Armchair Thriller.
Is this one of jokes?
There's not. We'll try and get one in, though.
Yeah. So it sounds like you had an all right childhood.
I was a very happy childhood, really. I mean, yeah. I was a bit wayward at school, but only a clown. I wasn't like burning things and smashing windows. I was just liked getting laughs, you know, really. Yeah. I had a lovely upbringing. My dad was we had a very basic house to start with on a cul-de-sac, but my dad worked really hard and we got a better house after that. But this thing, I'm not a working class hero by any stretch of the imagination. I'm kind of like the son of an upwardly mobile sort of middle class family, really, yeah. You know. I didn't I wasn't brought up by my bootstraps on an estate in Salford. I was very fortunate to be adopted by a man who I greatly admire, my dad, who's very fair and he's got great wisdom. And he's incredibly bright because he went to UMIST.
Yeah.
And he was head of the student union at UMIST, my dad. And he was student of the year. So he got a BA honours in physics with distinction. And he was the highest pupil that year. And he's on a plaque on the wall.
And has any of that rubbed off on you?
Not the physics, no. But my IQ is quite high, really. It's just the fact that I can't concentrate. It's kind of let me down.
You were going to say about you said there you didn't smash windows, but did you not burn things either?
I love fire. I still do. I'm a great fan of fire. In fact, my mum and dad used to search me for matches.
Did you ever play with detonators on the railway lines?
No, I never got. Did you? I know of that.
We did, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and we had Bonehead on episode one, and apparently he did the same thing.
It was a warning for the navvies, wasn't it, on the engineering days?
Part of that, yeah. We lived a mile from the end of the railway line. It was Royton, the railway line ended there. And the detonators were put there by a little chap in a little box to warn the train drivers that you were coming to the end of the line. Malakin about. That's what my dad used to call
it.
Have you been Malakin about? That. I think it comes from Malarkey.
Yeah,
Scott Malakin about. We had there was a building site near us once, so we were building some houses, and they left a steamroller overnight. And we figured out we could start it with a front door key, a Yale front door key.
Yeah.
Started it and just left it going. It just went off into the distance.
You're joking.
No, it went, man. It went.
You let it roll?
We let it roll, baby. That's roll.
That is so mad.
We could make this a new theme for another podcast. What's the most outrageous and dangerous
thing? Let's call it John and Clint going equipped.
It sounds like one of your new shows that you're doing voiceovers for, doesn't it? You've just done a wildlife one, haven't you?
I've done two, actually. I'm like, everyone thinks I'm Dr. Doolittle all of a sudden because I do. I've done The People's Vet for Channel 4.
Yeah.
That was 13 eps, that.
Right.
And I've just done Saving Britain's Wildlife as well. Yeah.
And you've just done, what was the other one you did recently that you mentioned before? Oh, you're just doing Police Interceptors.
Yeah. I've been doing that about 5 years now, but they move round.
Yeah.
They move round. So but everyone's got, each borough, each area's got different crime.
Right.
So County Durham was a lot of cannabis home grows, massive grows in houses.
Yeah.
And bored lads just chased, being loved just for a crack, just being chased, you know, and seeing if they could leg it fast enough to not get caught. But the we're now in Yorkshire, West Yorkshire, so there's a lot more gangs that so it's always changes from one to another. They tried Cheshire. It's a massive, sprawling borough, Cheshire, but it didn't really deliver the goods.
Right.
Not really.
Not as many crims per square inch.
No, not really.
Right.
And that's no excuse to start, people of Cheshire.
Yeah. You played drums, didn't you, from an early age.
11, I still play.
You still play him?
Yeah. Fortunately, I got to play on telly recently. You know Gareth Malone, who does the choirs?
Yeah.
He did a music quiz for BBC Music Day. So it was a panel game where you brought your instrument. And, I mean, I didn't bring my own drums because it would have been a right bind getting the... getting the 1206 from Stockport, really. But it would... yeah, I played drums on it and I absolutely loved it. And it got a good review. I'd like to think that that series will go. So it was Gareth Malone's All-Star Music Quiz.
All right.
And we did that for Music Day. But I still play. I've just got my congas retuned from Johnny Roadhouse they came from. They were very reasonable as well. Still a sticker on. I couldn't believe how cheap they were. Years old, though. But I just put new fibre skins and they sound beautiful.
Yeah.
So I've got a digi kit downstairs in the basement, which is neighbour-friendly. So right. You put the cans on.
Oh, yeah.
Electric for those kit. Of you not in the... Yeah.
And can
those...
you do all that on it?
Oh, yeah, it's got that. Yeah. You can do the... Oh, do you remember Countdown used to be... High.
Yeah.
But that now, then it went... Like a dud timpani. And I don't know who, in what position at Channel 4 went, we're not having anymore. We're going... Doo.
What about EastEnders? Can you do the beginning of that? Yeah.
It sounds like someone falling down the stairs.
Yeah, it did actually, yeah.
It does. It's a very strange intro.
Yeah.
Another one to listen out for is, it's on Michael Jackson's Thriller. It sounds like he drops his sticks.
Yeah.
Well, I think, I don't know which track it is.
We'll do a Google on that.
We'll Google it.
We'll Jeeves it. Should we Jeeves it? Ask Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves.
Yeah.
Oh, is that still going?
No.
No.
But it's great, isn't it? What happened to it? 1 minute, it's Ask G. It's like MySpace. It's massive, one of them days.
It's funny I said that, because my brother's a producer on Children in Need.
Right, okay.
Ben. Oh, Ben, he's at the BBC. And Ben said, can you do some Pudsey tweets and get your ears on, buy your ears for charity? And I went, yeah, I've covered it. He said, I'm all over it. I said, I've done it on every platform. I've done it on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, Friends Reunited, and Tumblr.
Tumblr.
Do you know anyone? I just went on Tumblr for a laugh, and only I know I'm on there. But do you know what? Won't stop me posting.
Yeah. I've never been on Tumblr. Is that one where, is it like a dating thing?
No. No, it's not. That's Riot. Oh, no, that's Celeb Dating. I'm trying to get on there, but they won't. won't have me.
Are you single at the moment?
Yeah. They won't have me on Riot. It's like celebs date celebs, and I thought that's brilliant. That
right,
but I'm not good enough.
What about Tinder? Have you tried that?
I have in the past.
Is there celebrity Tinder?
There isn't, but you can get verified.
Oh really? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, you can get a tick.
Yeah.
I'm not. I leave it. I've had a go at it, and I'm off it. I'm going to go the old route. I'll go the old school route now.
Let's get back to music. What was the first music that inspired you?
Right, that's a great question. I was in France on the French exchange in Lyon, which is an industrial city. Mm. And why they chose to... It's like Twin Towns.
What year?
Let me think. 81. So I've been 12.
Right.
So anyway, it rained a lot and it was quite dull, but my French was pretty good. So it helped me French really well. But then I looked through the albums because it was 82 vinyl, and I went, oh, that looks good. It's a great cover. It's Stanley Clark School Days.
Right.
So I put that on and put the headphones on. I was away. I wouldn't stop listening to it because it had Steve Gadd on it, and because I knew drummers then, you see.
So it's like jazz fusion, I think they've called it.
Fusion, yeah. So it's like I knew Steve Gadd and I knew Billy Cobham were on the album because I looked on the cover notes, you know, who was playing on the tracks, and it was like it was a who's who of session players. But I love bass players because I'm a drummer, so it's part of the rhythm section, so it's the back end, you know, and it's kind of like that. I really like funk bass.
Yeah,
I've always liked it. Like when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, my favourite Commercial band was Love 42,
right?
Because of Mark's playing.
Yeah. What about reggae? Was that something?
I love reggae. Yeah. Love it. It's the only thing that kind of gets me dancing. You know, when it comes on, I start having a bit of a...
Oh, it's primal, isn't it?
Something about reggae.
Yeah.
It always gets me. You know, when I'm when I'm in the kitchen chopping up something, it'll get me moving.
I've been listening to a lot of ska. Like,
I love ska.
I've always loved it, but recently I've got these ska albums and I'm just banging them on. It makes me grin ear to ear.
I love ska
music. It's brilliant, isn't it? It's great.
Yeah, I love it.
Music might become your thing, but you got into acting. When did the acting start? When did you first realise you had a bit of a penchant? Is that the word?
Penchant.
Penchant.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. It's very good.
Penchant.
A penchant for... Right, so, really, primary school, Fagin in Oliver, aged 10?
Not bad to start.
Maybe 9, Fagin.
Yeah. Got the bigger pocket or two.
Oh, no, it's a massive, it's a big, reviewing the situation is a big song, that. It's a long song, that. It's a hard song, that. So from that to secondary school, a little bit in My Fair Lady. I think I was one of, what's his name, I'm Getting Married in the Morning's henchmen.
Right.
And then, boom, Joseph. And Joseph Technical.
So you had good roles. You never played a villager, did you?
No.
Christmas Nativity.
The My Fair Lady was a little bit village noddy. Kind of like, I love it when they memo to each other. They go, well, I'm off to London to make me fortune. They look at each other and they literally mouth, he's off to London to make his fortune. So I did amateur panto at Preston Little Theatre. Judas in Jesus Christ Superstar was an incredible singing part. But people go, your background's musical theatre, why don't you do singing? And I went, because it's, I have auditioned for Shrek. But the thing is, my kids are quite young, though. It's 2 hours makeup on and it's an hour off. It's a poison chalice. I'm glad I didn't get it. Honestly, can you imagine that? Like everyone going out in the interval going, come on, we'll go to the Chinese. Oh, no, you can't.
Yeah, you stay.
Two great green horns sticking out your head. Can't go, leave the theatre. Everyone's going, come on, are you coming down to Sananda? Oh, no, you can't. So, yeah, I have auditioned for a few things just to have the experience. But the thing is, I don't do it because it's such a draw for my children. The runs, the tours and the runs in London. Too many months.
Right.
And I've missed them too much. So that'll come later.
Yeah.
Amdram scene in Preston was the first one I did was Preston Musical Comedy. So I did Guys and Dolls and Showboat, I think. Carousel, maybe. And then there was a breakaway faction for younger members. So we did Grease and I was Sonny in that. He's one of the T-Birds. And then I did Mickey and Blood Brothers. When I was 17, just before I went to Runshaw College in Leyland to do theatre studies, I did that. But it was a very, very good amateur company. I mean, people, you shouldn't knock amateur dramatics because it's how I started. And some companies are very strong. They rehearse. Like Preston Musical Comedy, when we did Sit Down, You Rock in the Boat for Guys and Dolls, we did 8-part harmony. And I rehearsed that for amateur more than I've ever rehearsed anything I've ever done. That's how good it was. You know what I mean? My first actual paid gig was 5. I did Frank Spencer doing magic tricks because I didn't want to do Tommy Cooper. And I asked a bloke for a fiver. This is like 1976, right? I asked a bloke for a fiver and a magic wallet. And I went, can I have a fiver from somebody, please? And the guy went, yeah, I like that. So I put the fiver in the wallet and I turned it round and it's gone. Anyway, I never give it him back. Not a fiver in 1976 for a 5-year-old.
Could buy a small house in Oldham for that.
Of course you could.
Yeah,
definitely.
I remember actually, but when I'm giving my age away, but I remember a bloke buying a house near us for £300.
Really?
And it would have been like 67 or 68, 1967, 68, small tourist house in Oldham, £300.
300?
300 quid, yeah. There might have been some sort of a shady deal going on.
Oh, it might have been a terrible murder there.
Yeah. Or it might have just been
multiple murder.
It might have just been a coal shed. But
unbelievable. I remember my dad used to work for BTR, British Tyre and Rubber. And in the summer, in the 70s, we used to live in Watford. And we rented a house, but the house was for sale. And my dad told me how much it was. And it was like a 4-bedroom detached house in Watford. It was 17,000 quid.
Wow.
Oh, can you imagine what it's worth now?
Incredible, isn't it? When you eventually landed the Cold Feet role, sort of 1998, 99 and onwards, you were suddenly thrust into this level of fame you'd not had before. Because around here, everybody knew who you were. You'd done a lot of stand-up.
Yeah.
But that programme alone brought you right to the attention of the man in the street. How did you handle a lot of fame at the time?
I'd done the fast show. I'd done my Behaving Badly. It was only a bit part. It was that was a little bit. That was a foot in the door. And then fast show, obviously, that was a bit. But you don't get the interesting thing about the fast show is you don't get recognised as much because you're constantly in disguise. You know, so many different wigs and stuff. But I mean, the fast show at the time, it was cult. Really, it was underground. It was massive. The fans, proper fans, and still are. But that's kind of grown over the years, fast show. Mm. So at that time, I had a degree of anonymity, but was recognised. But then Cold Feet, I had no idea it was going to be that big.
Mm.
And it was huge. The timing was just right. The casting was perfect. When we did the pilot, I had no idea it would go that big. So one of the weird things that happened, I was in America at Universal Studios, and a woman stopped me and went, "Oh my God, you're in the park. How come? How come you get to walk around? Are you filming?" And I went, "How do you know who I am?" And she went, "You're from Kofi, right?" And I went, "Yeah." She went, "It's on the plane, on the movies." So it was like on every airline in the back of the thing.
Oh, yeah.
So you'd like to get international recognition as well. That was weird. Mm. But at the time, I just didn't know. But the thing, it's... I didn't do it to get famous. I did it to get... it's nice for people to admire your work, but I did it because it's a job that I wanted to do. Mm. And now it's a job I adore doing. What fascinates me is there are actors who don't really like the job, and I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't know why they do it.
Have they stopped appreciating what they've got, maybe?
I don't know, maybe. But I'm just so grateful I do a job that I love. But at the time, I was young. I was, you know, impressionable. And I lived in London when I was filming Cold Feet at the beginning.
Yeah.
So when I came here, I lived in hotels. So it was like, there's a lot of parties.
Yeah.
There's a lot of private members clubs.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of free stuff. And the fame comes, then the press comes sniffing, and then the press start nosing, and they nose deeper and deeper, and mm-hmm. then you're in it. And then I was a victim of phone hacking.
Yeah.
Surveillance. I thought I was paranoid. I thought I was being followed, and it transpires I was.
Right.
I was being followed. But, you know, that's the past, and I'm glad I can sit here today and say I used drugs and alcohol to self-medicate the pain of the attention and that I didn't want, you know. And I'm kind of like, well, I'm 50 next year, so I've just quit fags. I've been off the booze 12 years. I've quit the fags. I'm about nearly 5 weeks on the cigs, having the odd vape.
Let me go back. Hang on. Wrong. Just go back now to that. You high as a kite in more ways than one.
Yeah.
Cold Feet smashing all the records. You were off your tits in a hotel somewhere.
Yeah.
Tabloids are mithering you. And then suddenly the programme comes to an end. You were still a bit off it.
Yeah.
You're waiting for the phone to ring for your next gig.
Yeah.
Nothing happened for a bit, did it?
No. What I did was survived. I survived, really, on voiceovers, which that just kept the wolf from the door, really. But what's happened is most people have a private battle with addiction, but I had a very public one thanks to the tabloids.
Yeah.
And what that does is that tars you with the brush that the industry will go, well, you know, you can't get him insured. We can't
got
work.
A problem, hasn't he?
Yeah, can't. Will he turn up for work? So it took, I mean, I was sober even 5 years straight. I was still kind of, it was only in the voice world that everyone knew that, A, I was very well mannered, punctual, didn't bump into the furniture.
It was because you sat down, you weren't doing any acting.
It was just, you know what I mean? But it was nice to come back on Cold Feet and ask Terry McDonough, our first director on the new series. I said to him, "Would you say I was low maintenance?" And he said, "No, I can't possibly say that." And I went, "Why?" He went, "Because you're no maintenance." And I went, "Well, that's all I need to hear."
Yeah.
And that's just the best thing I've ever heard in years.
Yeah.
So I'm officially no maintenance Thompson.
Is that what that's called?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like that. I had a similar period, actually. The Spiral split in spring of 95.
Yeah.
Amicable split. And we'd gone for like 9 or 10 years of doing it full time, traveling the world. We'd played the Glastonbury stage, big stage that year, I think, or some big festivals, but Top of the Pops 8 times. And suddenly it all stopped. And I was sat in my little house in Milner or Rochdale. 2 kids to feed, waiting for the phone to ring. Now it happened for a couple of years, so I've been there, and it was it can be quite a dark time when you've been going from those massive highs to that low. And you did, you've openly spoke about the level of depression you experienced during that period as well.
Yeah, I've been, it's kind of, work for me is my drive. It's kind of like, I don't know, if I'm not working, I don't have a purpose, really. And even though I've got so many strings to my bow. So recently, 2012-13 were hungry years. They were tough.
Mm.
And I went to LA just on a whim to see what pilot season was about. And it was an absolute fool's errand. And I would tell any actor just to go out there to the things that I'll go out to LA and make it. Well, to do that, you've got to live there. You have to move, you know. And there are some people that do it. Like, I tell you, he's done a great job of it. Ricky Whittle.
Right.
He's in American Gods on Prime, Amazon, and he's fantastic in it. But he's made that move, but he's moved there. But I wasn't prepared to move there. And the thing is, though, afterwards, when I did Billionaire Boy with Catherine Tate, Catherine said to me, She went, oh, John, he says I had a terrible time. I went, I've never been so low. I was agoraphobic. All it ended, I didn't get a single audition when I was there for 6 weeks. And all I did, we saved each other's sanities was me and Bradley Walsh.
Right.
And we'd ring each other and go, what do you want to do? We went, usual. He went, yeah, riding bicycles around Marina Del Rey.
Oh, brilliant.
And laughing at bodybuilders. And you know what I mean?
It's a good image.
Well, me and Bradley saved each other's sanity. But Catherine Tate said to me, don't go to LA unless you're invited.
Right.
Which means you've got a job. You know what I mean? Tone goes, honestly, it's so needy, such a needy place. Like everyone's on the take. Even the way everyone that works in another service, say the service industry, they all want to be actors.
You must have been chuffed then that Cold Feet came back and got rebooted and again went in at a massive level of success.
I can't tell you. I didn't have no idea. I remember watching it live when it went out that Monday night. I'll rewind a bit. It was cast and producers only were invited to a screening of Ep 1. Mm-hmm. Ep 1 new series, season 6. Yeah. Season, you see, it's become a season. It's American season. Yeah. It's not series.
Very American thing,
yeah.
Yeah.
Series 6, Ep 1. Anyway, I sat and I watched it and I was blown away by it. And I saw Jimmy after. I went, I was all right that here, my man. Yeah. It's good, yeah. I went, Jimmy, it's amazing. He went, it's really good. And then they all went to have a bit of a sit round and drink and a post-mortem of it. And I went, I just couldn't.
Right.
Where I'm going. They went, where are you going? Oh, I've got to go. I was overwhelmed because I thought, this has got legs, this.
So when you were filming it, you didn't feel that?
It's weird. Really? Sometimes, it's great to be back, but you don't know. It's basically, it's the public that decide, even though you know. I've been in things that I thought were good that bombed, you know.
And these days, you've got that instant social media now, haven't you?
Say that, yeah.
Which you didn't have back in
word
the day.
Word of mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's unbelievable. So that's another thing. So I watched it live that night because I thought, well, what I've seen, I know works. I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty good. So Cold Feet went out and then I just watched it and went to bed and I didn't touch my phone. And it was a deliberate thing because I didn't want to know until the morning. Oh, my God. It was the second highest trending thing in the world.
Amazing.
On Twitter, and it was just insane. I feel so blessed, but I mean, for the last 13 years people were, is it coming back? And there's lots of kind of indications it might be. Some of it was rumour mongering tabloids, just, oh, let's just, you know, silly season, let's say it's coming back.
And it's never going to be your decision, that it's somebody else's
totally.
Call, isn't it?
Yeah. So then when I got a draft for a, well, it was really a pilot for a new, it wasn't a reboot, it was or a remake, it's a revisit. That's what it is, really. It's a revisit of the show. We went in guns blazing. But I would hope so, really, because you've got 13 years of pre-production. Should be okay. So the draft of the first step of the Series 6 was strong. So we all kind of, it was a bit like how we imagine you assemble a bank job, you know, and you go, you know, we get old McGee on the safe cracker, get him, and you go round, and we all ringing in each other and going, what do you think? Are you in? He goes, no, mate, I want to go straight. I don't want to do no more Cold Feet. No, I want to go straight. I don't want to do no more. But this series, the second series, it was that difficult second album. You all know that.
Yeah.
It was really hard. And it was supposed to be 8, and we didn't do 8, we did 7.
Right.
So now we're down to 6. So they're consolidated for 6. But this series, I will tell you now, is miles better than the last one.
Amazing. Let's talk about another high point of your acting career. You and me played alongside each other, sort of, in the film 24 Hour Party People.
We did.
You played Charles, the, was he a TV
producer? Regional television producer, yeah.
And I was a train conductor called Ernie.
It was a mad film, that, wasn't it? It was mad.
Did you do any filming on the train? I don't think you're on the train.
I wasn't on the train, but I remember Lenny James, his agent, went, are you on that coach?
Right.
Because word got round what was going on.
We filmed on a train. It was me and Coogan. He was playing Tony Wilson. I was playing the train guy. So I took him to his seat. So we spent an afternoon filming on this train in Bury, on the little private railway line.
Yeah.
And all the extras were like these, they picked pretty dopey looking extras, really, but, you know, to be fair. And but they were all, it was just a mad, like I said, a very surreal. I mean, I'm not an actor, but very surreal moment in time, that me working opposite Coogan for an afternoon like that, surrounded by these strange people. Let's move on to talking about the city of Manchester. It's the main thing we're covering on these podcasts. Do you think there is a sort of unique Manchester spirit? And if you do think that, how would you identify it?
I just feel a great affinity with the place. I'm very lucky in my lifetime to have been here when it was a proper cultural melting pot that you'll know musically and me comedy, that it really, it was put on the map brilliantly by through the arts.
Yeah.
But loads of just, it was as we say, like locally, buzzing. It's funny that we say buzzing and the B is now such an emblem. Yeah. The two were never kind of connected, were they?
It's well, the B's always been there as it's a sort of symbol.
But it was never there because the B was buzzing, you know. Mm. It's mad that the two things are, inexplicably linked. But when I was a student here, there was always that kind of cultural underground phenomenon that this place had something magical about it. And I've seen it change so much, but with a great affection. You know, some people go, oh, it's not like it used to be. And, you know, I'm not one of those people. I'm a remainer. Do you know what I mean? And I remain with the fact that, I accept change and I look forward to the way that this city is developing, and it's exciting to see the changes. And there's little pockets now. It's becoming like, you know, like the Northern Quarter, then there's First Street, the Spinning Fields, and there's all these little kind of neighbourhoods that are developing that was like, it's like amazing. I remember my dad used to work in Greengate and I used to walk under this railway bridge to get to Shambles Square, the old precinct there. I remember how horrible it was there. There was a weird shop on that, you know, that walk up. There was a waterbed shop there as well. The only one in like miles anywhere. You know, go to Salford for your waterbed. Yeah. But I remember walking up there and thinking, on the way to the old Arndale when I was a kid, when I would have gone to see my dad at work in Greengate, which is just the other side of the old Manchester Salford Royal Infirmary, you know, that has flats now.
Yep.
So my dad worked behind there and we used to navigate through to town. But I remember thinking Shambles Square, Sussex Armoury, the Arndale, the misery, it was grim. And then just looking that if you made that, took that same route now, and how vibrant and exciting it is. We've got amazing things. My mate told me, this is a story that you might not know that fascinates me, because I like ghosts and horror, and I love, like, Halloween's just gone, but I love it. And my mate, Simon Dinigan, is an amazing classical guitarist who was at Cheetham's.
Right.
And he said Dr. John Dee, who was Elizabeth I's necromancer and alchemist, he was like practiced the occult. And they say that he summoned the devil in the library at Cheetham's. And apparently, I've not been. If you go into Cheetham's, and on the floor in the Cheetham's, kind of melted into the stone is a cloven hoof.
Are you joking?
Print. Wow. And that's where he appeared. So that's that's Tales of Terror from Thompson. So yeah. I love it because it's like so many things. Like now, it's kind of like suffrage. It's been put on the map. I didn't know. And it... it's kind of getting more of an identity as a, you know, I knew it was the home of the first computer, but Alan Turing and all our history is kind of, you know, it's becoming a more validated. Do you know what I mean?
It's true, yeah.
It never used to be. It was kind of, I think we were tarred with the brush of many northern towns. It was industry, you know, dark satanic mills, cotton, and you know, people in impoverished conditions, work to the bone. And it was.
You mentioned a couple of names just then. I'm just want to wrap things up now. Who are your favourite humans of Manchester, past or present? Give me two or three names. They don't have to be Mancunians. They can be people that have settled here or done amazing things for the city.
Well, Tony Wilson was a good friend, actually. I was very shocked when he died. I got to know Tony quite well when I did a show called Remote Control on Channel 4. Channel 4 it was, and I had such a laugh on that. It was brilliant, and I got to know Tony quite well on that, and we used to have quite a laugh, and he's put the place on the map massively.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? He's such an interesting character as well. He's one of those people that have a few friends, you know, colleagues that have passed away, and he's one of them I can't quite believe he's gone, really. And then that brings me to my next one, obviously, Caroline.
Yeah.
That's a big shock, and I've not really dealt with that properly because I didn't see a lot of her in the latter years, and it kills me. And I said to Steve Coogan at the funeral, I said, I feel terrible that I never saw it, but he said, please don't beat yourself up, John. And I said, well, it's not that for want of trying. So I did try to communicate with her, and I would text and I would ring her, but she wouldn't get back to me. And sadly, that's the work of the tabloids. They created a recluse there.
Yeah.
Because she was lived in fear of being persecuted by the papers, and it kills me. You know what I mean? But I was very, very lucky to work with her.
Yeah.
Her last project, and she played my wife in it. So that I did get to see her not long before she died. So Caroline, Tony, I don't do sports, so there'd be no footballers in there, I'm afraid. I mean, once, this is so embarrassing, I can't stand football, and I've never liked football. I was bullied at sport at school, so I've never liked it. So don't like any sports. People think I'm a freak. Like, I was in Crete when the World Cup was on, and someone went, watching the game tonight? I went, no. And they went, what? It's England. And I went, no, I don't like football. I just don't like it. They went, well, what sport do you like? I went, none. And they went, they look at their wives and go, come on, Sheila, get your coat. It's weird. And I didn't drink. They thought I was a nutter. A non-drinking football hater from Manchester. I might as well have landed in a UFO.
I've got a funny story about Caroline that I want to tell you.
Yeah, please do.
During that period when the Inspirals would split up and I was on my arse a bit, and I started doing theme tunes for Granada Television.
I didn't know that. You're like Bruno from the Kids from Fame, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, you know, multi-talented.
Mr. Shurasky, my music.
So I was doing these theme tunes. Anyway, one time I delivered a theme tune. I went down into the cafe in Granada and she was there with Craig Cash.
Yeah, yeah.
And we sat down for a brew. And she said, what are you up to these days, Clint? And I said, oh, I'm just writing a lot of theme tunes for Granada. And she said, oh, that's good, isn't it? I said, yeah. I said, I've got theme tunes coming out of my arse, meaning I've got a lot of them.
Yeah,
that's a phrase on it. I've got them coming out of my arse. It means I've got a stack of theme tunes. And she says to me, you know what, Clint, some of those theme tunes do actually sound like they've come out of your arse. But they did. They were great. Proud of them.
Name one? What's your favourite?
Well, Engie Benji was a beauty.
Oh, Engie Benji. That was me, that.
Engie Benji, engine man.
Fantastic.
Yeah. One more thing I'm going to ask you, John.
Yes.
John Thompson.
Yes.
Describe Manchester in three words.
Okay, you ready?
Go on.
Cheap, friendly, and inclement.
That's good. Inclement.
But you know what? It's a good test of people's intelligence. They go, if they go, what's inclement? I kind of go, go and look it up.
That's really good, that. You can see that on the tourist board ever do new billboards. Manchester, cheap, friendly, inclement.
Yeah, that's, you can quote me on that.
John Thompson, thank you for being a human of Excess Manchester.
I've loved it. Thank you very much, Clint.
There you go. That was John Thompson. Make sure you join us next week, where I'll be speaking to Manchester legend and Happy Mondays singer, Rowetta. Don't forget to follow us on social media. On Twitter, we are at HumansXS, and subscribe to Humans of Excess Manchester on your favourite podcast platform. And do feel free to rate us and leave us a comment. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.